It's great to be here with you young witches on this fabulous night. Remember, girls, show the world. Let them know it's Halloween. Hit it!
Boo Earns. We are here live on Unfixed for the Halloween Spooktacular. I am Adam Jensen. I'm here with none other than the very creepy Toby Hallam. Toby, you look a little frightening tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm absolutely exhausted, suffering from these drawing in evenings, the cold weather, you know.
It's dark.
It's Halloween.
Yeah, it's getting autumnal. It's getting more and more dark, as the days get dark. I noticed it's starting to get dark at like 3 p.m. It's starting to be autumnal here. It's starting to be evening time.
Absolutely, and the daylight saving hasn't even kicked in. It's just a dreadful prospect, the whole winter coming on.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people think that like the thought of winter approaching is actually worse than the winter itself. Do you subscribe to that? Or
Yeah. I mean, that's the basis of all the sort of horror notions that we have. It's better if you don't see the scary thing. Seeing the scary thing just removes all doubt.
Did you say scary? We are here for the Halloween Spooktacular. It is the most horrifying and hair-straightening Unfixed. Maybe ever.
I think ever. Well, ever from my experience.
Yeah, for you. Yeah, this isn't the first Halloween show, but we have some cool shit coming up for you. Actually, Toby, could you maybe fill us in on what's coming up for us, coming up for the listeners here?
Yeah, of course. Well, I mean, as usual, I've sort of come up with some kind of, exciting, scary thing it's scary today, from history to talk about. So that's Toby's Dark History Corner.
Dark History Corner, for which I have a theme song, sort of.
Yeah, we're going to sort of audition theme songs over the next couple of episodes and
So I have a theme song for the Halloween episode, right? And then I have Dead Ringer for the actual theme song from that point on, the normal Toby's Dark History Corner.
That's big news. That's exciting.
It's a big deal.
Languishing in silence for many episodes.
I know, and it's not a bona fide segment unless it has a theme song.
All right. Well, maybe I will get my wings.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah,
So then there's also the excitement, the glee of Adam and Toby go for a walk.
Ooh, yes, we do have a going for a walk. And where do we go? Where do we walk to?
All the way to the Grand Canal, and we went and saw and we saw a show.
Yeah, we saw the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Just the Rocky Horror Show.
Rocky Horror Show, right. It wasn't the film, sure.
And then also we have the exciting and always jubilant 90 Seconds with Andrea Lorien.
Just wanted to give it a swing.
Oh wow, we're on fucking radio soundboard.
We've gone there. Yeah, okay. And so and then what else? And what else?
Well, we've also got the podcast within a podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You've come to know it as Shower Talk.
Shower Talk, and that's coming up, right?
Yes, a sort of filial horror story. And you've been writing a book for some time, and so was the outcome of that.
Uh-huh. Well, a side effect, maybe.
A side effect of writing a book, yes, is that the publisher is here. Again,
he left me a voicemail. My wacky, quirky, nervous in the service publisher has left me another voicemail, and I listened to a bit of it. He kind of okay. I think it's better to just play it a little bit later. I'm actually really interested in getting to that. So sure, publisher coming up.
And then it's usually scary, but this time it's going to be doubly, maybe even triply scary. It's the scary news.
Uh huh. That's frightening, Toby.
Yeah.
The scary news deserves an organ.
Oh. I feel like the Phantom of the Opera is about to come out every time, but he just gets sort of grasped before he's going to sort of get to the meat.
Yeah, we came to a consensus that we wouldn't be one of those shows that plays a lot of sound effects at one point.
No, I'm still waiting for the boing.
Oh shit! No, I actually used the boing recently in that I was talking to my wife. Both my wife Nina and I are trying to lose weight. And I had a PSL, a pumpkin spice latte. I had a grande. Okay, so that's the middle one. It's tall
with
grande.
Cream. It's cream
tall
necessary.
Grande and gordo, I think it is. And no whipped cream and skinny, by the way. So
all right, what's gordo?
Gordo means fat in Spanish. Anywho, so I had the second one, the middle one. And I talked to my wife, and she sent me a little, you know, a picture on some kind of, you know, messenger app, and it had a picture of a donut right next to a coffee, and I'm like, oh my god, you know, donut, coffee, what the hell? And she's like, no matter what, it's still less calories than your PSL. And I sent her a face and a link to a YouTube that was just bong, 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 bong. But the face is like the curly mouth, like, ooh, like, you know, big eyes. And
this is a long version of the story where your mom burned you.
with what, the curling iron? Or, oh,
I think it was, I know. She ran a burn.
So is that everything we got?
No. There are, as usual, some guests.
Guests. Well, as normally we just have a guest.
Yeah, but this time more.
More. So we actually have two.
Yeah, two guests.
Two guests. Toby, it is a science fiction double feature of guests. Does that jar you? Oh, yeah. Check it out. How do you like this version?
Yeah, so this is the sort of skater punk version of the Rocky Horror Show.
That's right. Yeah, this is the West Coast hardcore version. This is the punk rock picture show, I think.
All right. Well,
pretty dope.
It's recognizable.
Thank you. Oh, listen to that. Yeah, this is the supergroup Me First and the Gimme Gimmies, Toby.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's members of Lagwagon, NoFX, Fat Mike. Sure. They actually got booed out of my hometown Pittsburgh in the baseball. They had a 5-night gig or a 3-night gig or something. And they got booed on the first night and they didn't come back.
Oh, such a super group, booed out of the stadium.
Look, it's not for everybody. All right, so
speaking of super groups, I just heard something astonishing. Bob Dylan got a Nobel Prize?
Yeah, so I saw his picture and I go, fuck me, he's dead. Because that's how it works, right?
It's all over for him now. That's the last achievement he needed.
If there's a picture on New York Times, it means he's dead. Doesn't it? So no, and then I just scroll down. I'm like motherfucker, like, and then it's like, oh, he won a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, I didn't have any real response to that. It was just kind of astonishing.
The shocking thing is that as I scrolled down and read that he was getting a Nobel Prize, and I was like, oh, he's not dead. I was like, is he not dead? It's gotten to the point where I honestly don't know which celebrities are alive.
I'm having that response with Tim Curry these days. I was sure that in that recent reaping at the beginning of the year that Tim Curry had gone too.
Yeah, no. And that's something I want to get to because, our two guests, as I said, and the science fiction double feature of guests, we've got Kitty LaRue and we've got the Grim Squeaker. They are hosting an event called Bleedin' Deadly coming up the last weekend of the Halloween weekend of October. And I think it's up near the Rotunda Hospital, something like that. We're gonna get them to get into that. But it's a variety show. It's a Halloween thing to do. And for people that are kind of looking for something, it's a bit more, you know, left of center. It should be an awesome thing to do. I'm looking forward to going at least one night, at least. Anywho, listen. So we're talking about the science fiction double feature. Perfect segue. We went to the Rocky Horror Show in Board. Oh my gosh! And we went to see Rocky Horror and we met some Rocky Horror people. As you do.
Yeah, there were people dressed up. There were people doing the shtick, you know, shouting back at the performers.
Which is just for the film. Anywho, we get into that on Going for a Walk. So we met a couple girls that are from Dublin 4, and they talked to us about Rocky Horror. And so let's go for a walk, Toby.
All right.
I'm going for a walk.
I'm Adam Jensen. I'm here with Toby.
Hi, I'm Toby.
Toby Hallam. And we are here at the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And we've met two fans that were dressed up as Magenta. What's the other one? Columbia or something?
Yes, Columbia.
Right. I'm not that well-versed. Toby would be more well-versed. Back in Australia, Toby used to be all into Rocky Horror, right?
Yeah, they used to have a midnight show there on George Street. So how did you guys get into watching Rocky Horror Picture Show?
I actually haven't seen it before, but I found a like a tape player. And I was looking for tapes through my mom's thing and came across the Rocky Horror one. Yeah. So I know all the songs, but I've never actually seen it before.
Yeah, sure. No, the music's more important. I got into Jesus Christ Superstar just from the album. I hadn't seen live or the film or anything like that. That's the actual, it's more pure, in my opinion. So you're a purist.
Yeah.
But you've seen the imagery, clearly, because you're dressed up as Magenta tonight.
Yeah, obviously.
And yourself, how did you get in?
To be honest, I was kind of the same. It started off with the music, and I was kind of like, what is this? The music's amazing, and like, you know, I've never heard anything like it, so I looked it up and I found the movie originally and I watched it and I was just like, fell in love.
They workshopped it. In fact, it was a stage show for maybe 5 or 10 years before it became the film. And in fact, what do you think about the people calling out the stuff to the actors on stage?
It's quite funny, I'm not going to lie.
When I can actually hear them, it's quite funny, but sometimes you just hear a mumble and you're like, what? I missed that. Yeah.
Because I think I know some of them, but I think a few of the people are just going sort of freeform now to almost heckle the actors.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, where's the line drawn, Tubby? Like, where's the difference between heckling and playing along to a scripted kind of shout-out?
There were a few ones who sort of tried to get it into sort of very brief gaps, and that seemed a bit sort of off the money. But my brother was working in the West End on this when it was being performed in the West End, and he got to know sort of Richard O'Brien a bit, and he said that he absolutely loathed the callbacks. Like that was the thing he despised about the show the most.
Right, so he hates them. The creator of the show hates them. What do you think about that?
Well, to be honest, I feel the show nearly asks for it.
Sure. Hold on, wait. The woman recording.
Let the woman finish.
The popcorn and soda.
Yeah.
So yeah, you guys are the only people that I've seen that are dressed up on the top tier. Is that isolating? Does it feel like an isolating thing?
Not really. My brother was meant to dress up as Janet, but he chickened out at the last minute.
Oh, please. So, yeah. Is that the guy with the popcorn just now?
No,
he's somewhere else. He's the one in school uniform now.
How do you? What do you think is the correlation between, say, Halloween and the Rocky Horror Picture Show? Horror,
cross-dressing it, pretty much everything, to be honest.
No,
it's basically
the Frankenstein concept.
Yeah, the castle, haunted castle.
Yeah,
exactly. It just screams Halloween.
You said Rocky Horror just screams Halloween. Could you give us a scream by chance? You're my girls. All right, thanks so much. Have a good night.
I'm going for a walk.
Okay. Yeah, we met
fucking gems of Irish youth.
We met some hardcore fans there. Look, the one that was dressed up as Magenta. She said she'd never seen it before, but she was really into the music, and I can fully appreciate that. I sincerely can. That's how I got into Superstar, Jesus Christ Superstar, and I think I maybe like it more than somebody's like, oh, it's a cool movie or something, or a cool stage show or something like that. So she digs the music. The girl that was dressed up as Columbia, which was difficult for the listeners, I guess, to differentiate, I suppose. But she was the one that pissed you off while you were listening to that one. If you got pissed off, that was probably that one.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bit sort of a bit of a groupie. But I said getting into the music before you saw the show, that's sort of like the hipster approach.
No. I don't know. I mean, okay. I think if it just happens organically, not really. But is it really like... Okay, look, if you go out and you source yourself a record because like someone's like, no, get into the songs first, man, like then sure, okay, you're trying.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, not necessarily that hipster is a sort of insulting.
I take it as
sort
a bad
of
thing. Yeah, no, I took it as a damned negative.
I'm still trying to find a good way of sort of approaching the whole hipster issue because sometimes it's worthy of your spite, but sometimes it's just people doing something really cool.
Yeah, like listening to records. So, all right, that was the going to a walk segment, and I'd like to thank I'd like to thank our two guests, the girl that dressed up as Magenta and Columbia. Toby, real quick on Rocky Horror, Columbia, what the hell? What is she up to? Like, what is her role in the thing? It's just like this showgirl thing. She's in love with like Frankenfurter or something. What's the deal?
Yeah. She was just one of the cool party people that Frankenfurter brought into his court.
Okay, so it was a hip scene. Is that what it? She's part of the hip scene.
I think so. I mean, that's all the people who are doing the time warp as well. They're just coolios.
Yeah, I thought that like, yeah, okay, I get that. But like everybody that has a name kind of like had a role, almost like a horror film or like a vintage horror kind of Bride of Frankenstein role. Whereas she was just this like showgirl, very very bright and colored and sparkly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's she's the one that screams.
Hell yeah. Oh, she does at some point, yeah. So, okay. So, as I said, I've got a great theme song for the Toby's Dark History Corner, but that's coming later, right? That's coming in the normal show. Right now we're doing the Halloween show. And just to give the listeners just a little scene setting, right now we have where I'm talking to Toby over top of a real carved jack-o'-lantern. Dark Nina's present, my little witch buddy. I've got a swamp hag hanging over my shoulder. We got little a bride and groom pumpkin heads. All the lights are different colors, and it's all themed.
Yeah, red light everywhere.
Red light, orange light, purple light, you name it. Hey, I can change the color of these LEDs anytime you want, bro.
Wow, that's so exciting,
dude. So I've got some ambient music. I just like to throw this on in the background. And okay. Could you do your dark history shit?
Yeah, all right. The shit. I
don't mean shit like crap.
No, that's.
I mean shit like stuff.
It's Halloween. I know you like scare houses.
I do,
Adam.
I do, and we're gonna go to one.
Yeah, absolutely. Where
they,
there's
a, I think.
And often in Ireland, you have to travel like an hour to get out to this place where someone has the space and enough chainsaws to be able to set up something truly terrifying out in their backyard.
I've only got 7 chainsaws. I can't set up a Halloween haunted house like this.
A minimum 8 chainsaw house.
Yeah, so we're going next week, I think, with Vinny Nagozel.
All right.
Right. Bagozel, if you know. Yeah, okay.
And so I made it my mission to sort of see when maybe the first scare house had been. And I'm not sure I got the first one, but I did definitely get an early one from the history of America. It's the sort of story of the Bell family, and
Ma Bell got the ill communication. Those guys?
No. It's the Bell family that later became called the Blair family. Ooh. In the Blair Witch story.
The Blair Witch is here.
This is what is sort of inspired the whole thing, and it came from the around about 1800. There was the Bell family. There was John Bell, and he lived in North Carolina with his. And he was about 32, and he had a young wife. I think she was 12, and they realized that North Carolina wasn't doing it for them, so they decided to move to Tennessee. And
I'm just a spit take. Why would North Carolina not do it for somebody?
But yeah, as a wedding present, a friend had given them a slave, and so they took the slave.
As you do.
Yeah, it's 1800. I mean, there's been no civil war.
Right. Go on.
So they traveled to Tennessee, and over the next few years they have a family. So by the ripe old age of 20, his wife starts having children. They have 8 children over the next 7 or 8 years.
Right.
And it's then. As their farm starts to become a bit more successful, that some strange things start happening.
Ooh.
So John Bell, while sitting on his porch one evening...
He has the ill communication.
Yeah, you want that to happen, don't you?
At some point.
He sees something strange on the horizon in the distance, and it's like, oh, it's a bit like a sort of dog. But its head is like a rabbit.
Dude, if you want an organ or a ghost or a scream, just give me a little nod, okay? Just give me a little point.
Okay, I'll try. But yeah, so his first response is, I will go and shoot it. He goes to shoot it and shoots it, and then when he goes to find the body, there's nothing there. This is
that's, murder, yeah, right? That's how you do it.
Several more occurrences like this happen. The one of the sons sees what he thought was a turkey and goes to shoot it. And there was nothing there. And then sort of more strange things start happening in the house. They start hearing distant voices, like the voice of an old woman in the middle of the night. They can't quite make out the words. But sometimes she's singing, sometimes she's saying. Then occasionally they'll hear, the nibbling of rats at the foot of the bed. But when they go and light a candle and go to have a look, there's nothing there.
Oh, Jesus.
And all these things seemed a bit sort of hack, but that was brand new in 1817 when we're up to now.
Like superstition.
No. These sort of stories of ghosts, sort of things happening, and then it gets a little bit more. They start hearing the voice gets a bit louder, and at one point John Bell starts. He feels like someone has grabbed him by his hair and lifted him up out of the bed.
Wow.
They have strange voices, like the smacking of lips, like. Going on. It's like they're still workshopping some of these scary things.
Yeah.
And then something a little bit more sort of strange happens. One of the daughters, whose name is Betsy, she starts getting interested in one of these local
lads. Boys. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so she's getting into this guy.
She's into guys.
But this is when the ghost starts getting a little bit more aggressive and starts the ghost starts being able to say words that they can understand. They learn that the ghost is an old woman called Kate. And the old woman called Kate says, "Do not marry that young boy."
Mm.
And so Betsy, afraid, calls off the engagement with the young boy.
Right.
But the ghost gets more aggressive. He starts slapping people. John Bell has the issue that when he's walking in the field, sometimes it plucks his shoes off while he's walking along.
Okay.
And the ghost tells them a little bit about their origin story as well. The ghost says, "I used to be buried nearby, but somehow one of the teeth from my skeleton got buried underneath your house, and that's why I'm looking for the
teeth." That's genuinely scary.
Yeah, that's a bit that was a bit scary as well. So you know, some of the wins, some of them are losses. But the family's getting a bit concerned now, and they ask some friends to come in and see if what they're experiencing is right. And the friends experience it as well, and so more people from the town come. And there are multiple reports of people coming in and seeing these different sort of situations go on. You know, being slapped in the face. You know,
he's abusive.
Yeah. One of them even said that Kate, the ghost, tried to come into his bed at night, and he could see the blankets rising up and twisting around a body in front of him. So he's like, ha, I've got it now. Uh-huh. And he grabbed the blankets and goes to throw it in the fire, but an astonishing smell comes out of the blankets. And he has... Oh!
Sorry, I set up a little popper.
And he has to drop the blanket and never manages to catch Kate.
Damn.
And so it was said that in fact, maybe the ghost, everyone knowing the ghost, kept everyone a little bit honest. And certain people said that...
it's God.
They didn't swear. They're all quite good.
It's like Santa or Jesus.
And one of the quite nice sayings was, men would make sure that they wouldn't do what they're right with their right hand, what their left hand would be ashamed of. So apparently... A ghost stopped people from masturbating.
Yeah, I think we could read right between the lines there. But thanks for spelling it out for the slower uptake audience members.
Well, yeah.
It's about jerking off, ladies and gentlemen.
So the final sort of celebrity bit of story was that a few years after the ghost had been sort of common knowledge, there was a famous $20 general by the name of Andrew Jackson came along, and some of John Bell's sons had fought with him during the War of 1812. Uh-huh. And so he turns up and he's there with his entourage, and just as they come up to the border of the property, his horses stop and he's like, "Well, I bet that's the witch stopping my horses from getting up here."
Of course.
And so they go, and they're all going to stay there, and they're going to prove this witch is right or wrong. One of them even has a silver bullet in a gun.
Blair Witch?
We're going to stay here a week, and we're going to prove it. Suffice to say, they left the next day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What's it mean?
I don't know. They were tough men, these guys.
Yeah, they sound frightening.
Andrew Jackson was a stone-cold killer.
Oh, wow, yeah, so I hear.
Anyway, at the age of 70, John Bell dies, and they find, by his deathbed, a vial of... green liquid.
Uh-huh.
And that green liquid, the way they test it is they gave it to a cat and the
absent.
Cat died.
It's
and
absent.
They were like, what is this?
How'd they give it to the cat with the syringe?
Anyway, after he died, the ghost says, I'll be back in 7 years. Comes back in 7 years. Does a couple more scary things. Uh-huh. And the story ends there.
Dark history corner, ladies and gentlemen. It's authentic. Toby refuses to allow... You refuse to... What's the term?
Elaborate.
Yeah, no, there's another one. Like, make something more colorful.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to augment the stories. This is all from a...
Scientist James.
An essay written about 40 years after the whole thing happened by a journalist, sort of supposedly gathering together all the stories that happened.
Damn straight. All right. Toby's dark history corner, okay? All right, everybody. Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Dude, hey, man, you know, I have, as you know, like, I'm trying to publish a book.
Oh, yeah.
You know about this.
Maybe you can include some of these scary early American ghost stories.
There's definitely Halloween, elements to the book as I write it. It's happening already. My publisher is so wacky and quirky and nervous in the service that he calls me and I deliberately avoid his calls. I save the voicemails. I play them on the air for the listeners and, He called me, and damn it, if it doesn't sound like it's going to be a doozy, I'm looking forward to listening to it. Here we are with the publisher, ladies and gentlemen, here on Unfix, on the Halloween Spooktacular with Kitty LaRue and Grim Squeaker.
Well, this is your publisher, Adam. How you doing there? I just thought I'd give your voicemail a call there, since it's been a few weeks since I've spoken with it. There's Halloween in your book there, Adam. It made me think back on my life, because I've had a lot of very scary things happen to me in my life, Adam. I have. A few years ago, it was Halloween, And I was having a late night drink there in the study of my Manhattan high-rise building. When who should walk in but a silhouette, Adam. Yeah. It sat down in my leather-bound chair there, and it seemed to be yelling something at me, gesticulating madly. Yeah, but it sounded really distant and mumbly. I heard the word royalties and book while it aggressively pointed at me. And as I said, I don't understand. Do you have a book? Do I owe you money? But it became even more agitated, Adam. It stood up and paced. Then it leaned in towards me and started motioning like it was stabbing its own eyes out, Adam. And then it did the same towards me. It was mumble shouting, Adam. Stab, stab, stab. It made the gestures like that. But then it stood, swatting my drink to the floor. It whisked some papers off the desk. In the doorway, it stopped and turned back to me. And clearly shouting something from a great distance, it pointed aggressively at me. Then it slammed its fist on the door and barked the F word from what sounded like a mile away. And then it stormed out. I don't know if it was scary exactly. Mostly the entity seemed annoyed with me. But it was a silhouette there. So after that, I checked my inboxes, to see if maybe I overlooked a package or an email from this gentleman. Sure enough, Adam, I found books. Three books spanning a period of 8 years there. But they were entirely black and featureless, which is why, that's why I overlooked them there. They were silhouette books, Adam. They weren't shadows, because shadows are insubstantial, diaphanous things there. But like the figure on Halloween night, though, these books merely, shed light in making them entirely unreadable and, utterly black there. I don't know how to contact this author, but the Pomo editor is urging me to sign him right away. Now, this next one, maybe not such a big deal, it affected me. When I was 14, my family was spending the fall in South America, or as they say, Sud America. Yeah. My dad did missionary work for the Church of Jesus H. Christ, which is a sect that, it doesn't matter. Really. But anyway, on October 31st, we were having spaghetti dinner in our jungle treehouse. Mom, dad, my two brothers, my sister, and I. It was really a perfect moment. Everyone was laughing. Dad had brought air conditioning to the tribe. He'd built a huge ice machine in a clearing, and we used it to pipe cold air. But anyway, I remember the night jungle sounds, the heat lightning, the laugh of my mother, and then slowly they all just they slowly started to fade away there, and they slowly vanished, laughing like that in the jungle, and then I was all alone, thousands of miles from home. I never saw my family again. The police accused me of murder, but my dad had installed a surveillance system, and the tapes exonerated me. In the end, I just had to pay a fine. But my family just sort of vanished. So sometimes I wonder, what happened to my family? Adam, I just want to wish you a happy Halloween, and stand by. I'll be reading your book, and I'll be in touch with some more feedback, and feedback there. Okay, well, you have a good day there, Adam. Bye bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, my publisher, my shifty, jerky, kind of odd odd man.
Those little micro strokes that he's having are just happening a bit more regularly.
He's a passionate person. All right. And so, yeah. There you go. The publisher. Hey, I wanted to mention something. I was watching, I was shopping, actually. And I went, and you know how I sometimes do the Southeast Ireland update?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, the newspaper telescope is so clumsily hard to be trying to coin something that's actually, you know, makes sense.
Yeah, amazing stories
crap
from the
you
country.
See in Ireland. Yeah, but we have to have the newspaper, right? So we basically recount it. We're trying to just find new segments to entertain the audience all the time.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We try a lot of stuff that just doesn't make it to air.
Sure. I mean, some segments they're born and they die. You know, they're still born.
Because we're absolutely committed to bringing you the highest quality.
Right. So we have, I just noticed there was two articles today. I think the published date is today, the 13th, the Thursday, the 13th.
Oh, my God.
It's kind of a crappy, shitty version of Friday the 13th.
Sort of false Halloween.
Poor man's Friday the 13th. Right. So I just noticed that the two different newspapers here in Dublin have articles about McDonald's.
What?
McDonald's restaurant.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the Scot.
No. So there's two headlines, right? So these are from two separate articles. I think one's the Herald, one's the... I don't even know, man. They look like shit rags to me. But anywho, so two headlines tell me. One, his boy, age 10, dies after a McDonald's. In Irish speak, that means he ate McDonald's.
I mean, but shortly after. It wasn't like, you know, he ate McDonald's and then 70 years later he died.
Poor kid died of a heart attack. Food allergies are suspect, okay? So they call it a McDonald's. Like, I'm going to have a McDonald's. And there's one more. A quarter pounder with sleaze. A man exposed his willy at a McDonald's. But he tells, I am not a pervert. A man who exposed himself to a 19-year-old female McDonald's worker after ordering a double sausage breakfast. Yeah! Yeah!
I'm Willie McDonald. Here's my sausage.
After ordering a double sausage. Yeah! Breakfast broke his silence last night to insist, I am not a pervert. I'm not going to name the guy. He blamed the incident at a drive-thru something. I took a picture of the front page. Okay.
He broke his silence to say, I am not a pervert. You know, what kind of gravitas was he trying to preserve?
Yeah, I know. He's... Yeah, he was just trying to clear that up. Hey, man. So there, you know, we do we have our call-in guest Andrea Lorien call once a month, and she gives you 90 seconds of her stream of consciousness. Okay?
Absolute blast.
I don't speak in monologue. Do you speak in monologue?
Yeah, but it's a sort of stilted monologue, even internally.
But for I'm sure even then it's a dialogue or a group, a polylogue, perhaps you'd call it. You know, you've got different voices in your head. I think like the one that says "get up, get out of bed." The other one goes "just 5 more minutes," right? And then it's like there's an agreement that's reached.
Yeah,
sure,
yeah,
five
sort
more
of chorus.
5 more, but no more. Right? And then 5 minutes passes, your alarm goes off again, and the voice goes, you know, time to get up. And the other one goes, five more. And the other voice says, no, we agreed. Right?
And the third one says, we knew that would happen.
It's like, do you want to jerk off just to get this day going? So, right. So, sure, I don't speak in monologue. I have dialogues with folks. But Andrea Lorien, she can go in monologue. She can go for as long as you let her, and we let her go for 90 seconds. Give me a sec, because I am going to get our Andrea Lorien on the air here. 90 seconds with Andrea Lorien coming up right about now, and then we're gonna get Kitty in here, right? We're gonna have some snake action. Let me. Okay, I'm working with the Skype here. Here we go. I'm gonna see if we can get Andrea. Okay, here with Andrea Lorien to do 90 seconds with Andrea Lorien. Of course, the segment where Andrea Lorien just gives us 90 seconds of a stream of consciousness. And hello, Andrea, can you hear us today?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can. Crystal clear, amazing, coming straight through the wire. We are going to do 90 seconds with yourself. We were talking a little bit before the show, and we agreed that the topic was going to be your encounter today with a tow truck driver. Is that right?
This is right, yes.
Right. So, okay, here we go. And 90 seconds with Andrea Lorien here on Unfixed in October. The scary October. Are you frightened to do the show?
It's not Friday the 13th. I feel like that would be a little bit more.
Yeah, Thursday
of a
the
13th. Moment.
Thursday the 13th. It's not quite as frightening.
Thursday the 13th. No, not
shitty,
not as frightening.
Shitty frightening. All right, here we go. 90 seconds with Andrea Lorien. And all right, here we go. Yeah.
Okay, so I had to have my car towed today. I don't know if in Ireland, if you guys have a thing called AAA, but in the United States, there's a thing called AAA. And like, I think it's like you pay $70 or $80 a year and they help you out with your car. They give you, they can tow you a couple places. They can help you jump your battery. They can put gas in your car. Anyway, so I had my car is dead. I took it to a mechanic last week. There's oil in my radiators. My head gasket's blown, AKA it's dead. So I need to have it towed back to my house so I can like clean it out and maybe try to like sell it for scrap metal. So I call AAA and I'm like, hey, I need this car towed, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, what's wrong with your car? And I had to go into this whole detailed thing with the AAA lady on the phone. And I was kind of like, I don't know why this matters, but whatever, I'll do it anyways. And then like 45 minutes later, I'm sitting outside my car and I see the tow truck driver pull up and I'm like, oh, cool, well, whatever. And I wave him down and then he rolls down his window and he's like, what's wrong with your car? And I'm just like, I have to explain this again. And I'm just like, it's dead. And he's like, what do you mean it's dead? What's wrong with it? And I just was like kind of exasperated. And I was like, there's oil. I had to go through the whole shebang again. There's oil in the radiator cords. The head gasket's blown. I need to tow it to my house so I can clean it out and sell it for scraps. And he just like lost it. And he started screaming at me. And he's like, you don't need to have an attitude like that. I don't need that today. I'm having a bad day too. This is so unnecessary. I don't need this shit. He kept saying that. And then he's like, you could just zip it. And he's like, he puts like, does like a zip in front of his mouth. And I'm just like standing there in the middle of the street. He's screaming at me in the middle of the street. And the people are looking. And I'm just like, what am I going to do? Like, I cannot ride in the cab with this guy back to my house. He's kind of crazy. And just as I was like wondering all these things, my neighbor pulled up and was like, hey, do you need a ride? And I'm like, yes, thank God. So followed him back to my house. And he like gets my car off or whatever. And he hands me back the key and he just says, have a nice day. No, I'm sorry. Nothing. And I'm just like, thanks. So I go inside and I call AAA's customer service. No way.
Hell yeah. Andrea Lorien.
Yeah, you hit the cutoff trigger there pretty abruptly.
Yeah, well, look, that's how it is. She's got her 90 seconds and no more, Toby. I refuse to give her any more than 90 seconds.
We have a freaking atomic clock here, so we know that it's no more nanoseconds, no more milliseconds.
Yeah, it is. It's timed down to the nanosecond.
That's right.
It's the size of an ice cream head, if the cone were the size of the UK. You know what I'm talking about. Don't look at me like you don't.
Buses, Wales, and football stadiums.
Yeah, totally. Hey, we are seconds away from bringing in our first guest of the science fiction double feature. We've got Kitty LaRue. She's the reptile queen, Toby.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen our additional special guests of the cold-blooded type coming right in the door.
Right, yeah. She's got snakes. She's got snakes with her tonight. It's insanity. I'm really looking forward to doing it. We're going to get in here in a moment. Toby, do you have any Halloween memories from when you were young? When you were just a wee lad in Australia, how did they used to celebrate Halloween back then?
Well, I mean, in Australia, Halloween is in spring, so there's not a huge uptake for the whole sort of.
Oh right, because you're upside
experience.
Down.
Yeah, we're all sort of hanging by our ankles from the sort of inverse gravitational force that happens,
and the toilets flush backwards. And by the way, fuck you. You mentioned the drop bears, okay? And I looked that up. You son of a bitch. The people apparently this is an in joke for like screwing with people. You mentioned the drop bears and everything goes a little wacky. All right,
yeah, absolutely. But you do know that the drop bears are all stoned because they have to eat the eucalyptus.
Oh, they only
leaves,
eat pot,
which makes them stoned.
Oh, right, they get high. That's something else. All right. Give us a sec. We're gonna get Kitty LaRue, the reptile queen, snake charmer, Kitty LaRue, part of the Bleeding Deadly thing, which is, by the way, Toby, part of the Bram Stoker Festival this October. Did you know that?
No, but I do know that Bram Stoker did live as a theatre manager in Dublin for
God,
a while.
God, why do you know all this?
Bus goes past
thespian
his old house.
Stuff. Are you a thespian?
You mean from Thesbos?
All right, we'll be back in just a moment with Kitty LaRue. She's here, she's brought snakes, and I'm a tiny bit... do you feel that? I have anticipation. In my thighs and my calves. My legs get funny.
Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Open up your hate and let it flow into me. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Madness is the gift that has been given to me. I can see inside you the sickness is rising. It seems that all that was good has died. Oh no, the world is a scary place. Now that you've woken up the demon in me.
Bobby, will you give it to me?
Two, three, four. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Open up your hate and let it flow into me.
We're back with our first guest of the night on the science fiction late night double feature Halloween episode. We have got Kitty LaRue here. She has come in. She is bearing. She's bearing a serpent. Kitty, how are you tonight?
Hi, I'm pretty good.
Yeah. All right. So you brought a serpentine little buddy with you.
I did. I brought two little buddies. Two of my smaller snakes, my corn snakes, Houdini and Angelina.
Right. Angelina. Wait, I thought it was Angela.
Angie or Angelina.
It's up to you.
Was known as Angelina for a long time until we discovered he was a boy, and at that stage there was no changing it.
You know? Right.
He was always going to be Angie then.
Okay, so wait, you made it a masculine version of Angie.
Oh, that's just gender fluid snakes.
So yeah, we don't judge. We're cool. Yeah. We're cool.
How long is Angie there?
Gosh, I'm not even entirely sure. I do measure these guys from time to time, but I think Angie's coming
she's
in
stretching
at,
out her snake.
I think he's about 4 or 4.5 foot. They're longer than they look because they're always coiled up usually. They like small spaces. They like to kind of get into everything. So, you know, they do.
That's key actuation. That's the thing that they do. Snakes coil.
Yeah. It's a snaky kind of a thing to do. Yeah. So,
right. Sure.
Yeah. So Houdini's a little bit shorter than Angie.
Because you brought two snakes with you tonight. Is that right?
Yep. So Houdini was my first snake. I got him about 8 years ago. So it's not like I have favorites or anything, but
no,
you know,
because your firstborn's not your favorite.
Not at all. But like, you know, probably Houdini. Yeah.
Sure. And I was handling the snake earlier in the green room, and it really grabs onto the wrist.
Yeah. Well, sometimes people get a little bit frightened because these are a constricting type of snake, so they assume any kind of a squeeze is them trying to kill you. But sure, they've no arms or legs. So I always say to people, they have to hold on some way. So of course they're going to give you a wee squeeze, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how they stay up.
You see, they're sort of constricting snakes. Do they get sort of habilitated to humans? They sort of get used to being around people, or do they always keep their instinctive sort of base behavior?
Well, and any of the snakes I would have, they've all been obviously captive bred for generations. You know, I wouldn't kind of agree with taking in anything from the wild and deciding to make that a pet. So these guys are very tame, you know, and they're grand with humans and stuff, but they're like any animal that you would keep in a cage. Like, these guys are in vivariums. If I just left them in there all the time and threw in food and water, they're going to start getting nervous of people and stuff. So yeah, so basically you have to make sure you keep them socialized and keep them quite well handled, and then they're going
to
keep happy
so
with you.
So to keep the snake well handled,
mm-hmm.
it's a prescription for a happy relationship. Thank you. Well, dick jokes.
One thing I do say is I have a 13-foot python at home. I
mean, me too.
No man is going to ever impress me again.
Oh, boom. Yeah, the slogan on Unfixed, Toby, before you came on the show, it used to be 2 jick dokes an hour. Guaranteed 2 jick dokes in an hour.
Right, right. So
we're trying to get back into that.
So, I mean, I was talking about them being you have to get used, have to be regularly handled. But they're acting snakes. They're performing snakes, right?
These guys are, yeah. I mean,
do they have good days and bad days?
Well, I know these snakes quite well. I've had all of them for a number of years, so I can kind of know if they're a bit stressed out or if they're a bit unhappy or anything. But generally, unless they've just had a feed, in which case they don't want to be touched for a day or two, they're generally kind of happy out to do most things, as long as they're kept warm.
Okay.
They're pretty cool with whatever you're going to be doing with them, you know?
So they had little sort of hot pads when they came here today, but do they also quite like a
Did you
a
say
laptop?
Hot pants? The hot snakes pads. Have hot pants.
Well, okay. Hot pants for snakes. That would be like
I'd love
basically
to see a snake
belt.
In hot pants, actually.
But do they like cats like to sort of sit on your laptop and stop you from working?
These guys, they generally actually like to, as he's doing at the moment, they'll wrap around my wrists, around my arms, and they'll get the body warmth there, and they're kind of happy out. Angie actually has a particular fondness for slipping into bras, because it tends to be quite warm in there, so that's a favourite spot of his.
Yeah, nice and enclosed there as well. And who's your 75-foot mega anaconda python? What's his name? Her name?
Well, it's actually a 13-foot Burmese python, but I'm sure she'll appreciate the exaggeration. So her name is Biggie, because she's quite big, and I'm not great with names.
Okay, well, snakes are always exaggerating their size.
You mentioned that, you know, when you come over, you're going to bring a snake named Houdini, and you said you're not necessarily great with names, but I figured that there was a reason you named Houdini, and Houdini is known for getting punched in the abdomen and dying. No, I mean, he's known for getting out of his containers, and I'm like, so you're going to bring a snake that's known for, like, getting loose to my house.
We're keeping an eye on.
And I have a cat, Maggie, the show cat.
Yeah, yeah. Princess Day Maggie Margaret Thatcher.
It's a spatula something. Hipsters named her, right?
Goddamn wild hipsters.
Yeah. So wait. You were saying that the snake likes to go into bras. Can we just talk about that a little bit longer? Did this ever really happen during a photo shoot? I noticed that you do shoots with, you know, people that want to do spreads or whatever.
That might actually be cool in a photo shoot, but he tends to do it in more inappropriate times. I also do kind of kids' parties,
there's
educational.
There's really good times for that.
But I do educational kids shows, and he tends to like to sometimes, if I have him around my neck, he'll try and nip into my bra, and then I'm trying to pull a snake out of my bra in front of a room full of kids. Often say the mum of the kid whoever's party it is will have a go with the snakes and stuff. And again, it's those moments when he decides I'm absolutely going to go straight down her cleavage. Yeah. And, you know,
you look at the ceiling and go, okay, everybody.
So, which came first, the sort of snake or the egg? Did you start performing with snakes in this sort of in this sense of your special Halloween show first, or did you do the educational shows first?
I had done some bits with the snakes, kind of at events and things. Just kind of mainly a bit of walk around, you know, with the large snake for photos and things. But really, I started getting into it when I started doing the kids' parties and stuff. And I'd be doing kind of, at the time, I was doing more of those than I was of the kind of nighttime events and things like that. But when I first kind of got into the burlesque and cabaret scene, it was shortly after I had just gotten into reptiles. So for me, they kind of went a little bit hand in hand. Then I couldn't stop thinking about how great it would be to be able to do something and, you know, work the snakes into it as well.
Yeah. How did you first find out that you liked reptiles, and how did you get into snakes?
I suppose I was kind of like everybody else for a long time. I figured, you know, snakes were sort of a bit scary, a bit nasty. And I was a teenager. I went to a science-y kind of a thing, and somebody there had a really small corn snake. And I just thought that this guy was brilliant, and I was holding it and I was taking pictures with it, and I was just in love. So I went home delighted with myself to the mammy, and oh my God, I found this snake. It was amazing. It was brilliant. And she was like,
no.
But she just wouldn't have a fondness for them at all. So that was it. I knew there was no chance of me getting any kind of a pet that wasn't kind of, you know, fluffy while I was living there. So it wasn't until years later when I moved out myself.
They eat things that are fluffy.
Yeah, well, they do. I moved out myself then and had a place, and I saw somebody was advertising a couple of corn snakes on, I think it was Gumtree or something like that. Right. And they were in these tiny little glass vivariums, like the size of a shoebox, and these snakes had well outgrown them. And, you know, and I went to go and see them, and my heart just broke for them. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to get these guys home, and I'm going to put them in a bigger tank. And I did. And they just kind of went from strength to strength. And, you know, that was, I suppose, where the obsession really began, because you can't just have a couple, you know. You sort of go, oh, man, I need to, you know. And then I got the big python, and then I started getting into, you know, the other types of reptiles as well. So it's just been a mad ever since, basically.
So you've got a bit of a menagerie as well. It's not just these three. There's a whole sort of
sequence. Absolutely. There's 12 reptiles altogether, and the three cats. So within the 12 reptiles, that's 7 snakes, 3 bearded dragons, a gecko, and a tortoise.
Damn.
So who's king of the house? Is it the cats or the reptiles?
I like to think it's me. queen of the house, actually. But we keep them very well separated. I mean, to be honest, I mean, the cats, obviously, you know, I always say they're more trouble than all the reptiles put together.
They're a little bit more, like, they figure shit out. Like, my cat can open doors and things like this.
Oh, Biggie can open doors.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Back when I lived in Drogheda, I had a hallway, and when I'd be cleaning out her tank, I'd often close all the doors, let her go out into the hallway, have a bit of a stretch, and I kept coming and finding her in the bathroom in the bath. And I thought, I must have left the door open. And then one day I found her actually in the act where she was opening the door, letting herself in, and then she'd sit in the bath.
Like a doorknob. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't locked, so it was easy enough for her to pull herself up. Yeah, she pulled herself up on the handle until it went in, and then
the handle.
So yeah, it's very clever. Like, and you know, so whenever people say like, snakes are a bit thick, I'm like, well, you don't know snakes.
Snakes can be thick. Like, I've seen your photographs of your Biggie, and that is no joke. What is the circumference of your albino Burmese python? Is it?
Yeah.
What is her diameter? Circumference, not diameter.
Gosh, I'm not. It's been a while now since I've measured her that way. She's certainly about. This is useless, I know, because obviously the people listening can't see, but she's about three or four times as thick as my arms.
Three or four times thick as the arm you can't see, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
three or four different times. How much does that thing weigh, man? Because that thing looks big.
Biggie. She's over 60 pounds. Wow. Yeah, pure muscle. I keep expecting myself to get pretty ripped and to grow some serious muscles from carrying around all the time, and it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I went out, actually. We recently got another Burmese python, and...
you have two now.
Yeah, so he's a good bit smaller now.
Is it green as opposed to the yellow and white one?
Yeah, he's a normal, so he's kind of the khaki green.
He's a normie.
That's what they're called. But I went to this guy to go get him, and this guy kind of looked me up and down and went, he's very big. And I went, yeah, no, that's grand. No, he's very heavy.
The sexual undertones are really just breaking through walls.
But I was like, yeah, no, bring him out. It's grand. And he was like, no, this is a really big snake. And I was like, just get the snake.
Uh-huh.
And he brings out this big snake. And I went, oh, Jesus, he's only small compared to the one I have at home.
For all
and
the guy
was quite taken
aback,
you know. Because
he sort of shuffle his feet and look down. And
I thought it bigger, was mate, fine. Like.
I never had any complaints.
Awesome. So you perform with the snakes. Can you tell me a bit about the act that you do? Like, have you worked this into a congruent act?
I do a few different acts with them. Usually now with the big python, because she is so big and heavy, like it's mainly kind of, I would do maybe walk about and photo opportunities in the crowds and things like that. But with the likes of these guys, the small corn snakes, there's a bit more you can do. I've done an act before where I come on and there's a giant sized teapot sitting on a table. And kind of throughout the midway through the act, I lift the lid off and out comes Houdini. And, you know, you can always hear the people in the audience closest going, it's not a real snake, you know. And I always feel like going, it is, but, you know.
I like how your Irish accent really came through whenever you're impersonating Irish people in the audience of your act who are like, you know, naysayers. Awesome. So, so you're doing a show called Bleeding Deadly.
Yep. So it's over four nights, two shows a night. So the 28th through to the 31st.
So that's what, the Thursday, is it?
It's the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday for Halloween.
Sunday, okay.
So we're actually doing something a little bit different. It's an act I've not performed before, so I won't say too much about it. But if all goes well, it's going to be Bleeding Deadly.
Freaking out. Can you give me a teensy weensy preview? What are you planning on doing?
There will be snakes. That's all you're getting.
So I mean, I was thinking about snake performers as well. And in fact, when I was envisaging,
when were you thinking about snake performers?
Like mere hours ago.
Okay.
And I was thinking, and I had visualized an albino snake, and I was like, why is that? Is there some root performer? You know, in the history of snake performers that has been very well known with an albino snake. It's like, why
does that? Why?
The big white constrictor. Why is that the?
My girl's yellow and white. Basically, obviously in the wild, albinos are quite rare. But I mean, they're quite well bred into captivity. You know, so a lot of kind of events and things when people would have, say, a large snake, it's usually an albino Burmese python. Like, I've been abroad in places and stuff, and they've had big snakes, and it's usually, again, a big albino Burmese python.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, bigger, you know, visual impact. But I'm just wondering whether there's some like 50s or 60s performer who's become known for that snake.
There's me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kitty fucking LaRue, Toby.
Damn straight.
Other than that, I'm not really sure if there's anybody who was known for using just albino snakes or anything.
I don't want to put you on the spot. Sorry.
I'm so used to Biggie though being in the colors she is. It was when we got Buddy, the normal Burmese python. I just couldn't stop looking at him because I felt like he looked like. you know, a real snake. You know, he looked real jungle kind of and everything, you know, whereas, you know, she does, you know, she's beautiful. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely love her. She's my princess. But, you know, I was just sort of like, oh, look at him, though. Doesn't he look all dark and jungly and, oh, like, you know, you'd actually stumble upon him, you know, in the middle of a, you know, whatever, forest or something, you know,
yeah,
whereas
yeah.
She looks, you know, she absolutely looks like she was made to, you know, to sort of perform, I suppose.
Made to be seen.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So you won't tell us a damn thing about what's going on at Bleeding Deadly. What do you generally do? What have you done in past acts in terms of how do you present the snakes to your audience? Like, what do you do on stage at all?
I've had Angie here likes to coil up in the hair.
Right.
So sometimes I've worn a small hat and Angie has. And the way we discovered this is just Angie kept doing it. Just kind of would coil around the little hat into my hair and kind of go for a little bit of a sleep. So sometimes Angie is essentially just part of the costume. And again, like, nobody thinks it's a real snake in the hair until kind of they see him come out later on and they do be gobsmacked. And then sometimes I just bring them on as they are, you know. Even if it's an act I've performed several times before, it's always going to be a little bit different because, you know, I take my cue from these guys.
Sure.
You know, like when I say these are well-trained snakes, you know, that means that they're not going to bite you, but it doesn't mean that they're going to like do a little dance of their own or anything, you know.
Sure,
what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I have to kind of see what where they're moving and kind of move with them.
You use the name a reptile queen / snake charmer, and you know, it evokes the idea of the Indian fellows with the flutes and they come out of the basket with these cobras that are often devenom gland and all this kind of stuff. That's not exactly what you do. You're a friend to reptiles. Yeah. I think I'm picking that up.
Basically,
would you mind if I handled your little buddy? Because there anyway, I know he looks like he's got a very firm grip on your forearm.
He's just
holding peel on. Him off. No, he's tied himself into a knot. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a what, a 4 foot? He looks like a tiny Burmese python to me. Oh man, he's holding
on.
I'm
sure he thinks of himself that way as well.
And you're very casual the way you handle these little fellas. Oh Jesus Christ! Okay, all right. Hey buddy, how you doing, fella? All right.
Well,
dude.
Basically, that's kind of years of handling them and everything. I'm quite comfortable, and I know them these particular snakes quite well. So I'm kind of happy enough. I know how to do it and everything. So yeah, people kind of they do. Gosh, you're so blasé about them and everything. And I'm like, sure, yeah, they're just my boys, you know. They're cool.
Yeah, it's my boy. Familiarity.
He's my boy.
He's all wrapped around the microphone.
Angelino,
now.
No, literally, dude. Toby, could you please take a photograph of this?
Oh, yeah,
because our buddy, what's his name? Angelino? Is it Angelo?
Just go with Angie.
Angie, yeah, but he's a guy. He's wrapping himself around the unfixed microphone right now, and his little tongue is coming out. He's absolutely adorable. I know it's supposed to be a Halloween show, and everybody's supposed to be, you know, scared and creepy and everything, but honestly, so cute. I find him cute anyway.
Ready,
the girl, you're
like
out in the green room with a couple girls. Is anybody a bit, you know who was actually a bit turned off by it? It was Pierre. Did you notice this?
Yeah, girl. I find that actually it's surprising. Girls seem to be a lot more receptive to snakes than
I can't figure out for a second why. I have
it's
no idea.
Like they're familiar with something.
Yeah, it evokes something. Oh, he's going. He is looking for the hair thing. How do you gender these things? You mentioned this is a guy.
They get probed. I don't do it myself. I'm quite lucky. The next town over has a reptile specialist vet, and she does the probing. And yeah, it is as unpleasant as it sounds.
I want a snake now. I want a snake, buddy.
Well, I mean, the only obstacle is getting it,
and also the fact that I have a cat and I don't have space. And yeah.
So look forward to next time in Unfixed with Adam, Toby, and the snake.
Toby, he's so...
I rarely meet somebody who meets the snakes and doesn't go away saying, God, I'd love to have one of these guys. They're amazing.
It's fun. But it's kind of like other people's kids, isn't it? Like in that you're like, oh, I love hanging out with kids, but like other people's kids. Whereas I don't really want to have an aquarium, keep it at a constant temperature, make sure they're fed, you know. Like, you know.
Yeah, no, there's a huge kind of novelty factor. And, you know, a lot of the time it's kind of young teenage boys think that this is a really cool thing to have, and then kind of as they get a bit older and kind of interested in the ladies and stuff like that, then a lot of the time the snakes or the reptiles are kind of, you know what I mean,
unless they're in the right scene, I suppose. I guess a certain type of guy, a certain type of girl.
Elaborate on that. What do you mean scene? What do you mean?
Well, I just feel like your metal guys, your goths, your all these types of people. It's like, you know, everybody's turned onto snakes in that kind of scene.
You may not know it by looking at him, Kitty, but Toby used to be in the goth scene in some other former life that I really don't know anything about. Yeah, isn't that right? Yeah, cyber goth.
The Sydney goth scene for a while.
So
there,
hot,
during
so rich,
what is it,
so
early
real.
2000s.
So raw. Yeah, all right. So, all right. So,
I'm sure a teenage goth Kitty would have been all over you.
Wow. All right. So, So, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to go to Bleeding Deadly. Bleeding Deadly.
Bleeding and that, Deadly.
It's up by the Rotunda Hospital, is it not?
In the pillar room.
Yeah, we could go for a walk there. Anything's got to be better than those goddamn Rocky Horror bitches.
Where can people get tickets?
Yeah. So, basically, I mean, if you're on Facebook and you literally type in Bleeding Deadly, you're going to come up to the event page and everything, and there's links to get the tickets, and there's a bit more info about some of the other performers and things. You know, they're coming from overseas and everything. So, it's going to be an absolutely brilliant night.
Yeah, yeah. Four. Absolutely brilliant nights, right?
Yeah,
and you're not the only performer at all. You've got Grim Squeaker, who's out in the green room, who's going to come in a little bit later, and you've also a couple other performers. Is that not? It's the most pierced woman.
And we've got Space Cowboy. He holds an awful lot of world
Space
records.
Space Cowboy for what?
I can't even imagine.
Gosh, he swallows an awful lot of swords.
Right. Okay.
At the same time.
Ah.
Among other things, you know, and so it's going to be a great few nights anyway.
I'm just wondering how this most pierced person in the world sort of got through security at Dublin Airport. But then I just thought, oh, it's Dublin Airport. They don't give a fuck.
No one gives a shit.
You're grand, yeah, sure, in Dublin. It's although I did get stopped once because I you know, you've mentioned there's quite a bit of hair. So when I kind of tame it in, there's an awful lot of hair clips.
Right.
And it kept going off. And I was like, guys, it's just my hair. And they're like, we're going to still absolutely grope the
knife,
fuck
maybe.
Out of you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah.
I'm attempting right now to peel our Angie buddy off of myself. And so at what point is he uncomfortable?
He quite likes hoods as well.
Oh,
any
yeah.
Small
he's definitely
spaces.
Got himself comfortable. Yeah.
Toby, hood is the bra for the head.
Do you want to handle our little buddy for a moment?
If I can, yeah.
I think it'd be a smart move. He's a beautiful reptile, truly. I know, again, we're supposed to be kind of, ooh, scary snakes and shit like that. But honestly, it's such a cool creature. And,
terrifying little sweetheart.
Yeah, I know, right? So I'm just like, hey, buddy, how you doing? His little tongue comes out. His tiny little eyes are just, oh, he's adorable.
Oh, look at him.
And what species would be out of the question? What things would be something you wouldn't want to go near?
I personally wouldn't, and I have been offered them before, but I wouldn't keep anything venomous.
Why would one?
To me, I'd never be able to actually, you know, use for performing or for any of the educational shows. I'd never be able to use a poisonous snake or a venomous snake. Sorry, right. You know, just for myself as well, I kind of see it as a bit of a step too far risk-wise, really.
Yes. Why bother?
Essentially.
It's got to be very niche. I mean, you know, what enjoyment can you get out of it apart from saying, like, look, the most venomous snake in the world?
Yeah, I kind of, that's the way I sort of see it. Like, you'd sort of be like, look at this beautiful animal in this tank that I can't really bring out and do very much with,
nonsense.
Because if he does bite me, I'm fucked, you know? Whereas obviously with these guys, I can take them out, you know, they can get their stretch, they get handled and all. So, you know, I figure they're a bit happier living a captive life than maybe a venomous snake would be.
Yeah.
Awesome. So Bleeding Deadly. This is this is Halloween weekend. This is the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And Monday, of course, this year is Halloween. Come on out, check it out. Look, go to Facebook, search for Bleeding Deadly.
But
it's one of the things to do. I'm trying to come out, and I'm trying to leverage my influence right now,
absolutely,
which is extraordinarily limited. All right.
Well,
so,
you've said nice things about my snakes, so you know.
They're so cool. I'd really fall. I'd
so you're good in my
love
books.
Immediately. I just want to have a little buddy that I can hang out with sometimes.
Yeah, don't listen, Maggie. He doesn't mean you're not good.
Thunderdome. All right, Kitty. All right. Thanks so much for coming on. We got a shit ton of stuff to do, and the night is getting a bit long in the tooth.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Kitty LaRue here on Unfixed. Again, Kitty, thanks so much for showing up. Absolutely love it. Love your little friends, and they're scary, actually.
Do you feel that?
They're scaring the living shit out of me.
Thank you.
Oh, shit. No.
Fucking A, right. We had Kitty LaRue on, Toby.
Yeah, and Angie.
Ah, so frightening, so terrifying, but really so cute, man. These little guys are awesome.
Yeah,
I love them. Hey, we got a little thing that we like to do, and it's when I wake up in the morning, Toby, and I feel like shit. I feel like dirt.
Oh.
I maybe have imbibed some alcohol the previous evening.
No, never.
I feel like shit.
Oh, well,
sometimes. I'm dehydrated. Yeah. You know the best thing to do for dehydration?
I think it's turn on the tap.
You cover yourself in water.
Soap it up.
Drink it. Cover yourself in it. It's crazy. It is the little trick we like to pull that we call shower talk. You know, the showers, Toby, are kind of like, it's kind of a calm time of the day, right? It's like your little peaceful Zen garden of a private rainstorm.
Oh, yeah. It's like you know, I've just booted up my operating system. I need some information, and I need to dwell on it.
So even the sound is so relaxing, right?
Absolutely.
It's just you're chill, kind of thinking about what's going on.
I love that moment when you sort of and then, put the temperature up.
Oh, Jesus.
It just goes on.
It really does. It's long. There's a visual element. And, ladies and gentlemen, shower talk of horrors.
Yeah, the water has run red.
It's run dark brown, according to film aficionados. Shower talk of horrors. We're here on Shower Talk, the podcast within a podcast. Here on Shower Talk, we talk about the things that matter, the things about getting up in the morning, covering yourself with water, soap, maybe some scrubs, maybe not. Maybe you don't want no scrubs.
Nope.
Some conditioner, perhaps, with your long, curly locks.
I mean, we've even talked about having a toilet and a shower together.
Yeah, that was Chad. He really took things in an odd direction.
Yeah.
Anywho, so here we are in Shower Talk, the show within a show, the podcast within a podcast, where we talk about a very specific subject, and that is showering, covering yourself in hot water, lather. I suds up, Toby. I turn off. You know, I have to get up in the morning and I have to go to work. But you know what I get to do before I go to work? I get to cover myself in hot, perfect water. Perfect water.
Yeah, and so that's why it's been a real struggle this time to get a shower story that's not so nice.
Oh, that exists, my friend. That exists, all right?
Halloween shower story.
Man, have you not ever had a kind of frightening shower or a frightening shower environment? Bad. So we lived in a place called the Mill House, and there used to be a lot of bugs, and the producer, Nina, she professed, and she was going to come on and talk about this, but she felt the show was a bit too full as it was. But anywho, she said that she was in the shower, right, in the Mill House. This is on Whitechurch Road down in Rathfarnham, okay? And there is a shitty fucking house. Like, there was no, sealant between the bottom of the stone wall and the linoleum floor, nothing. And a lot of insects would come in through the foundation. Pill bugs, they say potato bugs and other places, all over the floor. They would just die by the dozens. And Nina went to take a shower. And she saw a little hairy leg, like an inch and a half long, like 5 centimeters long, come out of the drain, followed by another one, and another one, and another one, and another one, and another one. And a whole spider pulled its body out of the shower drain. And she is completely arachnophobic. And that is not an exaggeration. She is terrified of spiders. She hit it with a hot stream and sent it back to whence it came. But holy shit, like, she was traumatized, man. Like, she was not the same thereafter.
Never spoken again.
It was just not... No, she's talked about it quite a bit, but I mean, it was really, really bad. Tell me, you've never had a scary experience? You've never gotten frightened by, like, you had never had a fantasy that something like the psycho shower scene, for example?
I have had an experience.
Fantasies
where
of skeletons running at
and
you.
And almost fell, and I'm just like, if you'd fallen and hit yourself, you would have been like, there's no one here for you, Toby. You're just going to lie here for, like, days.
That's true. And in head injury, you've got the experience in which you fall and you harm yourself. And it's some 70% of head injuries is falls, and some 40% of those are in the shower.
Everything's shit hard in the shower. There's no softness in the shower unless you've got one of those disabled showers. And I always kind of want one of those. They got the sort of like cushiony bits, and maybe you can sort of sit down and shower. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think that it's a good idea to have a shower that's quite safe. And I think that most showers are not safe. And I've definitely experienced the thing in which, as you said, you have this near misses. So you kind of go to have a normal shower, and you almost fucking die. And if that's not scary, then I'm not certain what is.
Yeah, wow.
So we're gonna attempt to bring in a call-in guest right now. So we're going to call this guy Barney.
Yeah, in London. So another international shower talk.
Another international shower talk guest, Barney. Barney, can you hear us right now?
I can hear you. Hello.
All right. Hello, and thanks for being on Shower Talk, the show within a show, the show about showering, talking about showering, talking about the things we think about while we're showering, talking about thinking about talking about showering. We're here to talk about showers of horror, Toby.
Terrifying showers.
Things that frighten us, little showers that don't go well. Things that are maybe a little toxic. Like maybe like the water starts running blood red.
Could be the Halloween edition of the shower show.
You know what I'm talking about, sir. Barney, welcome to the Halloween edition of Unfixed, and welcome to the Halloween episode of Shower Talk here on Unfixed. I'm told
it's going to get spooky.
Things are already like really frightening. We had a fucking snake lady on. Did you hear that?
I haven't had the joy yet of hearing snake lady, but I'm sure she was thrilling.
What are you beating off to? What are you doing otherwise?
Oh, I've just, you know, it's a hectic world of Cockney gang violence over here in East London. I had to, you know, nut a few geezers before the phone call. So
not a few geezers? Is that what you say? All right. So, yeah, Toby tells me that you come from a very dark showering kind of background, that there was some trauma, shower trauma.
I think I see. You sort of talk deepest, darkest Australia, yeah?
Well, we could subtitle it, the diary of a teenage germaphobe, perhaps.
Okay, so you suffer yourself from a tiny bit of hypochondriasis, is that right?
Well, at the time, I've recovered.
Oh, awesome.
I've gone through a program, and I'm all right now.
All right, cool. But I've heard of something really, really dark, really, really nasty happening in the shower scene. Toby, is that true?
Well, it was a bathroom incident, so perhaps it's stretching the shower, but I mean, yeah, I mean, it's horrifically worth mentioning. To anyone in their regular kind of hygiene rituals will be deeply affected, I think.
Please mention, Barney. Mention.
Okay, so, I mean, yeah, the background is I was, somewhat of a hypochondriac, and we had an electric toothbrush. And as you know, you can take the tops off these toothbrushes. You can put them in, like, a communal toothbrush holder. Now, underneath where you store your toothbrushes, there's a little kind of void space, a kind of... where design floor, which should have been blocked in by an engineer or designer in production somewhere. But in Australia, you have cockroaches.
Oh.
Lots of cockroaches who love electronics. They love warmth. And they also, as it would appear, love to feast on human kind of spittle and
right. Toothbrush residue.
Toothpaste off-run, slurry. And, okay, so... one day, much to my horror and traumatic experience, I found nesting in this void space, like a vision of hell, just a swarming kind of nest of these baby German cockroaches with little speed stripes down their backs, just all swarming around. And then I couldn't sleep. You know, I was traumatized. I was everywhere. Whenever I closed my eyes, all I could see was these swarming baby cockroaches.
Nymphs, I think they
pouring
might be
into my very being.
Right. Okay.
It's like Nam.
It was.
Barney, it's like Nam.
Like I said, I had to do some real deep meditating and stuff to get myself out of that place.
Right. Toby, you were mentioning that you lived in a house one time and that there was a shower that the drain had clogged.
Oh yes, I was associated with the house. I didn't live in the house at the time. It was far too sort of you know special and unique for me. But I did have some friends, and Barney knows about this house as well. It was in a Sydney suburb called Enmore, and the house was called Elstow, and it was occupied by a group of the most bachelors you've ever come across. And there is a story.
Single guys.
A deep, profound story.
Tell us about the shower.
Well, the shower was, it was an upstairs shower, so there's always difficulty sort of plumbing upstairs, apparently.
Sure.
Particularly in a house that's like 100, 150 years old. And so the difficulty was that the shower, which was also a bath, had started to get a bit blocked.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
And so so a small sheen of sort of grey, slightly oily, soapy water had started to build up.
Uh-huh.
And after a little bit of time, I realized that the amount of shower water going down the plug was more than this plug could deal with. So the level of water got higher.
You're welcome. Continue.
And a little higher. Until eventually the bachelor boys, the bachelor lads from this house, were starting to have to shower in ankle-deep grey water.
Opaque water. Slime.
Yeah, yeah, sort of. And the key element was that the surface had this sort of rainbow sheen on it.
Yeah, yeah, that's the oil. That's the oil.
Yeah, absolutely. And so...
human oil.
You gotta milk that cow.
Yeah, yeah. And so the level got higher and higher. This is a bath, you know, so it could be 10 centimeters, 15 centimeters, and you're kind of it's you're wading through water now.
Jesus.
Or so I get told. Wow. I saw the sort of like a midway point from this bath. It was right. it was now about halfway up, filled with grey water, several right. weeks old in some instances.
And so, how do they cope with it?
Well, different fellows in the house dealt with it in different ways. There was one who ingeniously decided that he was going to wear gumboots and shower in his gumboots.
This is so just to check in, Toby. This is straight up fucked up.
Yeah, this is the things that boys do when living together in their 20s.
Liquid plumber? A real plumber? No, those aren't options.
Oh, no, this is something unknown, yeah. Something challenging, something different.
I'll wear some wellies, some rubber boots. To shower, man. Don't those things fill up with water as the hot, wonderful fresh water.
Fresh water.
As the fresh water pours down your body, it fills up your boots like a little, like, you know, overflowing spring. It's your
mini buff.
Yeah, you're kind of
like a little... bath for your feet.
Yeah,
the shower was good.
It's kind of like a little, you know, garden fountain with different tiers, you know, where the bottom one fills up and then it spills into the, you know, top one and that. But sure, it's great.
You have a foot spa while you bathe as well.
You guys have a really, you know, somebody once told me that folks, Barney, did you live yourself in Australia also, or is it just your brother?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Oh, you did, okay. Somebody once told me to travel with Australians because they always keep a positive outlook. So you guys are talking about the most disaster fucked up thing I've ever heard in terms of showering. And you're like, yeah, but come on. It's like a nice little rain bath for your feet, like a personal sauna.
Live like princes. Individual foot baths? You don't have that.
Toby, you were telling me about, you know, putting planks across the...
Oh, yes, this was another ingenious solution that another one of the lads found out, that he would put some planks across the top of the bath and then he would stand on top of those and then shower with the water underneath. I don't think you could properly wet his hair that way, but this is not an issue if you're that ingenious. You're right. Basically cheering about how awesome you are.
Yeah, you're high on life. Barney...
I think they just kind of crouched on the plank as well, too, like some sort of hideous naked gargoyle kind of washing their hair.
Yeah, this is the shit I think about when I'm trying to fall asleep. Barney, have you ever peed in the shower?
Yeah, of course. I mean, who doesn't, right? Beat around the bush. I mean, there's no one else in there. If there's someone else in the shower with me, I might
pee on
hold
them.
It back.
Right. Did you ever do number two in the shower?
There's a line. There's a real line.
Right. Okay, so Barney draws the line at the hard stuff. Nothing, yeah. Just only,
I think
yeah.
that's a solid rule. If you can't push it down the plug hole with your big toe, then it shouldn't be in there.
So if you're unwell, say.
All right, yeah, yeah. So yeah, you can get away with it if you're shitting green spatter. All right, Barney, thanks so much for joining us here on Shower Talk, the place where we dissect the serious issues of our time, where we talk about the sudsy, you know, stand-up bath that we like to call showering.
And that was the most horrific shower talk we've
had. It was a pleasure. Let's not hide away our showering ways. Let's bring them out to the world.
I'm into it. I'm into it. I think we should actually maybe show each other. All right, thanks so much for calling in. And
that was that line, yeah.
All right, man.
Good to talk to you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you soon.
Thanks so much. All right, have a good day. You take care of yourself. Let's all cover ourselves in wonderful shower dust.
Let's.
In just a moment, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to come in with our second guest. We have the Grim Squeaker. He is a painless man. He's an unbreakable man. He's a man that can pound a nail into his face. He can launch a mousetrap onto his tongue. He doesn't give a shit. I've seen video photographs of him, of people breaking cinder blocks on his very abdomen while he's laying, Toby, on a bed of nails.
That sounds absolutely...
If that doesn't freak you the fuck out, nothing will, man.
I am astonished.
Right, so we're going to get Grim in here, and in just a moment, we'll have Grim Squeaker as part of the Bleeding Deadly Bram Stoker Festival event. We'll be right back. right, we are back, and we are here with the Grim Squeaker.
Hi.
All right. That's what I like. A lot of enthusiasm. A lot of a lot of contained pain and trauma that comes out. It comes out in your art. So just taking a wild stab in the dark. What the fuck do I know?
That's my job.
Yeah. All right.
And so, brothers in arms in music as well, because both of you guys were absolutely rocking out to that music.
Yeah, well, all
that's
the time.
New Misfits, Toby. It's a contentious topic, and that
Michael Graves is God.
Oh well, you know, yeah, we're all entitled to our opinions. Look, I have no problem talking like listening to New Misfits, but I think that the original thing that with Glenn was the original thing, and. I think when you kick out a lead singer that, you know, the band changes in a major way that you can't really ever really recover from. Like when Maiden kicked out Dickinson and brought in Blaze Bailey, I don't think there was new Maiden.
You can't compare Michael Graves to Blaze Bailey. That's not fair. That's not on.
Watch me. I just did.
Toby, all right. I think I may talk to you for the rest of the evening. Yeah.
All right, I'll just sit here
and keep it quiet. All right, ladies and gentlemen, cool. We are here with the Grim Squeaker. He is the pain-proof person, the unbreakable man. And, he's part of the Bleeding Deadly show that is going on from the 28th to the 31st.
28th, right? 31st, 4 days, that's 2 shows a night.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, the Halloween weekend. Where's the venue?
The Pillar Rooms in Rotunda. Right. Really nice venue. It's going to be pretty. There's pillars in it.
All right, and so our listeners can't see who I'm talking to, of course. But, look, what I'm looking at, this guy's got a skull face. Toby's got a skull face.
A skull face replete with jack-o'-lantern suit matching.
Yeah, head to toe.
Batman shoes.
Oh, shit. Stick that shit up.
You can't skip the shoes. Mix the outfit.
Can I see the shoes? Can you stick up your foot?
Got a little Batman going on there. I like to wear a Joker on the other foot so they chase each other down the road.
Okay. These are not the shoes that the feet
want. It's the yin-yang thing.
The shoes that the feet need.
It's the good, it's the good and evil balance that we've learned in Buddhism, you know, the balance of good and evil. Yeah, Toby just laughs openly at
like
me.
Buddha
at
to
me.
Batman.
At me, not with
Batman's
me.
Batman's way cooler.
All right, man. So, how did you get your start here in Dublin? Like, what do you do for work? What does Skullface Pumpkin Suit Man do for a living?
What do I do? I do everything. I'm an old school music hall kind of entertainer. I sing, I dance, I do the tricks.
You
I interact
act.
With the audience, and then, you know, I lie down in a bed of nails and have people swing sledgehammers at me.
Which looks pretty fucking dope. I'm not going to lie. That looks
it's a,
pretty
It's a good finish. It's a good, solid way to end a show.
Right. Is that the climax of what you generally do?
I like to end with something big. Right. I do other things throughout the act. So I normally open by hammering objects into my skull, follow that up with a few games of Russian roulette, and then you get to the big pain.
What caliber? 38, 357?
I actually play a couple of different versions. So I've done my favorite version I call Bleach.
Right.
I drink five glasses of water, but I have 6 glasses poured out. 5 of water, 1 of bleach.
Right. Who pours the...
Audience all the way.
Okay. And so how does one dictate which one you actually drink from?
Randomize and then roll a dice.
Okay. Man, your makeup is fan-fucking-tastic.
Thank you very much.
I'm not fucking around. Like, I showed a photograph of you to a friend, Pierre, who you met in the green room,
Pierre's a cool dude.
And he was like, man, the guy's makeup's great. So, and then I asked you when you showed up in full makeup and full garb with your pumpkin suit, your jack-o'-lantern suit. I'm like, man, thanks so much for showing up in your full regalia. How long does it take you to do your makeup? And you said about 10 minutes. That's
10 minutes,
man.
Well, in a past life, before I was an undead skeleton wonder, I did a lot of graffiti and sort of fine art illustrations.
Here,
so I'm
here
pretty
in
quick.
Dublin? Or
yeah, here in Dublin.
Illegal or
no, very legal. I did a lot of sort of festivals, Kings of Concrete. Okay. I was on the Irish Secret Wars team doing graffiti battles around sort of Europe. So that was a lot of fun.
Have you ever heard of these folks? They like have the subway cars, like there's like holy grails if they have to tag a certain subway car and then they'll go out
cool.
of their way, even knowing full well.
No, I'm actually not cool enough for that, or at least I wasn't back then. I got cooler with the pumpkin suit. It's all in the suit.
Right, right. That sort of brought you right up.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what would the Fonz be without his jacket? Yeah, come on. But I wasn't as cool enough back in the day to go around tagging holy grail train cars, unfortunately.
So, I mean, you're into this whole sort of like a freak show kind of circus kind of thing. What's the name of that American guy who, Jim, he was in X-Files.
Carrie, I think.
Oh, do you mean Enigma?
Yeah, it was that episode. But there was the sort of, you know, the main guy who sort of, you know, started that, you know, contemporary freak show touring.
Oh gosh, I should know the answer to this question.
But I was sort of, you know, I guess, kind of leading in. Where do you feel more comfortable, on a stage or in a tent?
Oh, I love stage. No, I'm a cabaret kind of guy.
Okay. So it's a set sort of piece that.
I mean, I've done work with guys out of Coney Island and all, and for Bleeding Deadly, we actually have some like proper old Americans. School sort of. Americans, we're bringing in the Americans, bringing in the big guns.
Why not?
But we're representing. We've got two Dublin based in us. So that's okay. That's like nearly 50%.
The reason I ask the question is because you have this sort of the thing about, you know, you're going to expose your body to this, you know, maximum danger, maximum sort of you know, experience. But, you know, don't you want to sort of draw the audience right almost right on top of you so they can see that thing happening?
Sure, I love doing walk around. I still do a lot of walk around. I love being up in people's faces and getting someone to physically, you know, pull the nail out of my head.
Yeah.
that's a good buzz.
For those of you that don't know, this is the human blockhead stunt in which somebody drives a large nail into their face.
So we get about 6 inches. There's a little membrane inside your nose. You got to puncture. There's a little flap. You got to flip. You got to straighten out the passage that leads above your throat, and you got to stop before you puncture your own spine.
Yeah, I do shit like that. Actually, I don't. I'm yeah, I was going to try to just, you know, say like no big deal, but I actually, it is a fairly big deal.
It's a nose big deal.
Yeah, we had a fellow from Pittsburgh on. His name was Andrew the Impaled, and he did the blockhead stunt, and he also had another one in which he sewed his lips shut.
Oh, that's a fun one.
Yeah. Needles, this is a simple piercing thing, it's a hook with a bit of string. Not to talk shit on it. It was a hell of a stunt. He also walked on broken glass. And then he also sprayed some lighter fluid on said glass and lit it on fire and then walked over it again.
Nice. That's sterile the second time, so that's good.
Yeah, sure. It's better. Yeah. Also, his. I'm sorry to drag the conversation on into this guy who you don't know, Andrew the Impaled from Pittsburgh. But he did this one bit in which he like had a guy that was playing the apocalypse organ. And he incorporated music with his act. Have you ever had any kind of stand-ins, or did you ever like partner up with somebody when you did your?
Oh, I've had a good deal of assistance. I've done an awful lot of work with Kitty, and I have a stage partner who I do shows with every now and again. We haven't done one in a while. We were called Aces and Eights, which is cool gambling name. It's the Dead Man's Hand in poker.
Yeah,
which I like. Davey McCauley, fantastic performer. He's actually on Cruise Liners at the moment, entertaining for big books.
That's the way to keep it going.
Is that something that they do on cruise liners? They do this type of
depends on the cruise, Toby.
Well, he does the mentalism sort of stuff. He can read minds. He can hypnotize people. He's also, you know, incredible sort of gambler, card sharp kind of guy.
But that's your sort of thing. Your thing is definitely the physical sort of side
and slapstick.
Oh, so I mean, what makes you what draws you to that kind of thing? What makes you kind of guy?
It's the reaction. I mean, it's pure reaction. You get an immediate visceral feedback from your audience. You know, art is about taking what's inside your head, doing something physical in the real world, and other people seeing that and having a sympathetic reaction.
So you see it's quite close to clowning.
Absolutely. I would consider myself a clown. I mean, if I'm going to pigeonhole them, I'm a white-faced clown, just a neo sort of modern version.
I just wanted to jump in there real quick. But what you just said, Grim, is that take the thing in your head, make it into a physical space, and then have a sympathetic reaction. I'm like, fuck, man. I never had something. Like, I don't study art as such. Like, I'm in different sciences. But, you know, I was like, that's a really, you know, concise
that's
way.
That way, I mean, the question, what is art, is a big one. And yeah, that, well, for that me, that's my
right
definition.
Up, right? But where Toby went, he's like, so you're kind of a clown.
No,
I'm like, fuck me. That's really well. That's really
what's
well.
What's the
put.
Difference between?
And Toby's like, "So you're a fucking clown, right?"
The difference between a madman and a genius is just an audience. So I am both a clown and a genius.
Yeah, the way you're perceived, isn't it? Right.
Absolutely.
So you do. You ultimately your main shtick is the pain-proof man act, is it not?
Absolutely. That's the biggest draw. It's the big impressive one. There's very few in Ireland, so.
Yeah,
I don't think I can name a single one.
You see these clowns down in Grafton Street? They're on big tall unicycles, or they're playing their organs and their drums. And what's the big box that they sit on and also whap with their hands?
Oh, the beatbox sort of thing.
This idea, and it's cool and everything, and I like it. But I like it a bit more punk rock, kind of gritty, you know, horror themed thing. And I found you guys. Actually, I met you guys outside of the Circus of Horrors, right?
Yeah.
I saw your girl Kitty.
talking to the young woman who did the she was the, you know, oh my god everything's insane and I'm so hot and I can't believe how hot I am. And yeah, she was that broad. And sure, and she spoke to her after the show, and then I approached her, met you, and here we are finally 4 months later or something like that. Anywho, I'm drawn to the entire thing. I listen to punk music. I listen to punk rock. I listen to hardcore. I listen to metal. And yeah,
I'm something in- I love about horror rock. I love it. When I was little, my dad used to play War of the Worlds, the Jeff Wayne version, on a loop. And I think
that's horror rock.
Well, I think it embedded something. That's more opera. But the mix, the dread, because I was terrified of those walkers.
Absolutely, it's fantastic. See, sort of reminds me of the plot as well.
Yeah, you see that, you see a tree at night, and I just hear ooh long. You know, I'd shit myself, and I dug that the bit of rock mixed with shitting yourself.
Oh yeah,
it's a good mix.
It's very definitely very theatrical to do there. That was the mission, the rock opera, right?
Absolutely. Yeah,
so do you use that in your show?
I steal bits here and there. Like it's too much fun not to bang on one of your favorite songs and hop on stage dressed as a skeleton and like set yourself on fire. I mean, who wouldn't want to do that?
But more broadly, do you like a whole show with a theme or like?
Yeah, we've done a lot of themes, and we had a whole run of a show. Which was all of the Loving Dead, each show. So we had the Dawn, the Return.
Loving Dead.
Of the Loving Dead.
I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I don't know if you heard the show earlier, which I told Kitty that I'm like an hour away from where I live is Evan City. And that was
jealous.
That's where they filmed George Romero. Me. Who I, by the way, met. I had nothing for him to sign, so I pulled a cigarette package I smoked at the time. And he's like, are you just fucking with me? You're like, no, I just don't have anything else for you to sign.
I'm jealous. Really, Night of the Living Dead is like full on my favorite movie all time.
The first one, the black and white one.
Actually, I prefer the 90s version.
Okay. Yeah, no, I respect that. And Dawn of the Dead as well, Monroeville Mall.
Dawn of the Dead. Mall. Both Dawn of the Dead are first.
My mother lives 15 minutes from Monroeville Mall.
Really?
Yep. True story.
Okay. So I kind of don't want an interview anymore. I just want to like nerd out about zombies now.
Right. Well, that's an option.
What are we here to do here? So, what I'm really interested in is the Painproof Man Act.
It's a lot of fun.
I noticed you brought a briefcase in.
I did. I brought Justin.
What the fuck is my
Justin case.
Aha!
Ah, puns. We are so good at puns here.
Second time.
So Justin case has all my little bits in it. Mm-hmm. You had some freak show here before.
No. You were talking about this in 2005 at La Rose College back in when we were doing this show as a college radio show. We had a guy, and he didn't. Wait, hold that up to the mic a little more.
Oh yeah, this is fun. So I wanted. You were talking about broken glass. I don't have enough space here to walk on it. My feet stink. I don't take my shoes off.
You can get up on the table.
So well, how about this? How about instead? I've got a couple of smashed up light bulbs here.
Right.
Can you hear that?
Mm.
So I'm gonna have a little light snack while we keep chatting.
You're gonna eat glass.
I'm gonna eat broken glass.
We have, you were talking about, you know, having the people from the Ghost Walk on. You're like, I think we've gotten into the, you know, the more the mountains of freakdom, and then maybe the Ghost Walk people are kind of the foothills.
Sorry, I can't concentrate on what we're talking about because there's
Grim Squeaker is. He's eating glass right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose technically it's sand, but I wouldn't be trying that.
You got to be real careful what light bulbs you eat, because they obviously they add things to them.
The powdered fluorescence and that stuff.
Mm. Particularly white light bulbs, they add mercury to get the white effect.
Right, do you need a paper towel to sop up the blood?
Freaks don't bleed unless they want to.
Okay. All right, so just to feel uneasy.
Before any dead air happens, when was the first time you did that gag?
That gag.
Gag? Trick? What do you call them?
Stunt, I normally use.
Stunt! That's much better than any of the words I came up with.
It's a good way. I think it's a practical force in a way. You shouldn't use your body, but you do for entertainment's sake.
Was it, but when the first time you did it, was it like tentatively by yourself, or did you just say,
my sister, my
proud, I'm going to chew this bitch.
My sister's an A&E nurse.
Right.
So when I was learning my early stunts, I had her sit beside me. And sort of broke up the light bulb, sectioned it into pieces, did it real scientific, and sort of had, you know, a little taste.
Yeah,
Grim, all right, check back with me in half an hour.
Grim, you mentioned sectioned, being sectioned by your, I may or may not have texted certain services that are going to show up before you can leave the house in order to make sure that you're not a danger to yourself. Okay? All right. So Grim Squeaker in the mental health system. Thank you.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Tell me a tiny bit about Bleeding Deadly and what you're doing. Bleeding Deadly. You're planning on doing.
Well, what I'm doing lots of fun. I'm going to play Russian Roulette at it. I'm going to do a little bit of singing.
Yeah, bleach water.
I think I may do that one. I really enjoy that one. From a fine art point of view, it's fucking hilarious because when it goes well, it's an act where a man stands on stage and drinks 5 glasses of water and people watch it through their fucking fingers.
Right.
It's funny. If to me, from my point of view, looking out at the audience, it's hilarious when it goes right. I mean, when it goes wrong, it sucks.
So you're having a lot of fun up there, is it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't do it if it didn't entertain me.
Great. Wow.
It'd be an interesting performer who hated going up on
particularly
stage.
Particularly this act of all acts. I think that would just be slow suicide if you hated it as you were doing it.
Instead, it's fast suicide.
Sorry to bring the tone down a little bit. Toby, I really believe that people that go out on stage and hate what they're doing are really common. I think that a lot of people do, like, say, rock music or, you know, dance or whatever. They go out there and night after night, they're posturing, they're faking it. And it's just because that's what they train to do, and they think this is what I do, and this is what I know, and, you know, they hate their routine, they hate the thing that it's become, they hate their audience, and they do it anyway. I think that's really common, far more common than you think.
Oh, that's fucking grim. Well, I guess that's why I'm
grim.
That's grim.
but that's actually, I think that's the point. I think that helps me enjoy it, because I'm not doing a set. I'm playing a role, and that role's evolving and growing. That role's an awful lot of fun to play. I'm about as close to the Joker as any fanboy could hope to be.
Oh, sure.
So you know, and I get paid to turn up and do that and just prat around. It's a dream.
it might be a bit of a risky question, but like, what's the main difference in your opinion? What would be the one thing that you could really pick out that's the difference between your offstage personality and your onstage personality? What separates Grim,
that is a deep Grim question.
From your normal day-to-day lifestyle? It is.
I mean, yeah, it is. And I suppose the real answer, I mean, the really simple answer is, you know, confidence, bravado. The character doesn't get shaken by anything.
All right.
The character doesn't have a second thought.
Right.
You know, Grim just does. And that's the point. That's the release.
Is there a when a challenging situation comes up, because you work with live audience and feedback, kind of, is there a dialogue that goes in your head between your stage persona and yourself, or does it just come out?
Normally happen afterwards when I'm like, shit, is that going to come back to haunt me
during the come down? Yeah.
No, at the time it's almost like possession. At the time, you know, it's just in the moment you just do.
Right.
You know,
well, you've definitely got the appearance to sort of support the possession theory.
Well, you gotta look the part.
I love it. Grim Squeaker, is there anything else you can whip out of that bag of tricks? Are you willing to do
it? I'm trying to think of something that makes noise, essentially.
Yeah, that's the challenge. We're also used to a visual medium.
I think I can...
Hold on, we can create a mini audience.
I got one, but I do have...
That's a mouse trap.
Does that sound like anything?
Yeah, it does. It really
Fantastic.
Does.
Fantastic.
Grim, could you open the door and then call in just one or two people of your choosing? Yeah. Just so we have a little bit of an audience for your masochistic.
I can rent a crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
Step right up. Step right up.
Who might scream?
So, yeah. All right. Okay. So we brought in a rent audience as Grim is
All right, ladies. Do you know what this is?
A mouse trap.
It's a mouse trap. And do you know what this is designed for? It's designed for breaking the necks of tiny little mammals. Ideally, jamming this onto a really soft, sensitive, squishy part of the body would be a really stupid idea.
Yeah.
He's holding a mouse trap, ladies and gentlemen.
I am. It's true. Now I'm going to get this. I'm going to jam it onto my tongue. Let's do it.
He's going to put a mouse trap on the tongue. Ladies and gentlemen, mouse trap on the tongue.
Two.
Squeaker.
One.
Oh, shit sticks.
Jesus, guys.
Oh, God. And that was one that was used earlier for a mouse.
Well, it's added like a little bit of protein on it. It's good. Helps with the healing.
Yeah, yeah. Little light plague. Nothing serious.
Be careful with God.
Have that. Spread that.
Yeah. Rent audience, thank you for your time and participation.
You. Thank you for the show.
Nice. So, yeah, tearing the shit out of your body for, you know, sympathetic applause. Sometimes it's got to be a bit, you know, you kill yourself up there. Like
it's kind of a Marmite thing. It's one of those.
He's Australian.
Vegemite, bitch.
Vegemite. So whatever, they all taste like shit.
They really do.
But yeah, it is a thing. People either are grossly turned off by it or absolutely enthralled. A Halloween lifestyle. You can do it all year round. And so. Ironically, I haven't had a Halloween costume in about 6 years. Because I'm working.
Well, yeah, I mean, Halloween is the day that you dress normally, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Everyone else looks like me. It's weird.
We are pushing 2 hours.
Oh, right. So
that means we have to bid adieu to our new friend, the Grim Squeaker. He is performing at the Bleeding Deadly performance at it's up near the Rotunda Hospital. What's it
it's
called?
It's in the Pillar Rooms. It's the Bleeding Deadly. We're going to have the Space Cowboy, who is a holder of 44 Guinness World Records, I believe. I got that number right.
What's his deal? He's the most pierced person, or what's
he can swallow the most swords. We also have Elaine Davison, and she's the most pierced woman in the world.
Right.
When we have another painless man and sideshow, Danny Rotten, coming all the way from Coney Island across. Damn. And then myself and Kitty are going to be bringing our local weirdness.
Damn straight. I plan on being there for one of the evenings. I was asking Kitty if I can get free admission. Any chance?
We'll see what we can do. We've no idea in the guest
no
list.
No promising. Okay, that's great. Maybe just show up and try to squeeze in the back door or some shit like that.
Yeah, I'd be very...
Bring a mic. You'll just be like, yeah, press.
I'm at press, yes, press pass, yeah, absolutely.
It's been fantastic to have the Irish representation of the freak community. It's you are the bulwark.
I'm a bull of something.
All right. Yeah, sorry, I could talk to you all night, but listen, we got to run. We have a show to keep tight, and thanks
guys,
so much.
Thank
for
you so
around.
Much for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks right, so much peace. For coming around, and yeah, see you in a little bit. I wouldn't change places. All right, everybody, before you head off, don't move a muscle, an artery, or a vein. We'll be right back with a little more from Kitty LaRue and Grim Squeaker as we take a midnight stroll down to the pet cemetery. So don't scream, don't move. And stay tuned to Unfixed Halloween Spooktacular Late Night Double Feature. And we'll be right back to do Pet Cemetery with both of our guests in just a moment. We'll be with you until the end.
Tonight, the creepiest. Tonight, the scariest. Tonight, the most wonderful. Oh. And I hear.
Ladies and gentlemen, before we let you get off too easy, we of course have the recurring segment, Pet Cemetery. Now this is where we take our guests on a long, slow walk down that wooded path, Stephen King novel style, towards the Pet Cemetery. And yeah, hey, we've got two guests who are playing grab ass in the shower, and yeah, we're going to do Pet Cemetery here tonight, and yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Toby, it's like this like weird. I cannot seem to remember the ability to do it, but so we're going to play Pet Cemetery. We're going to do it right now.
We're going to play Pet Cemetery.
That's what I said. I know what I said, and I said it. All right, so we're going to play Pet Cemetery. Here we go. All right. All right, so we're going to do a double feature of Pet Cemetery. We have Kitty LaRue back in the studio. We have Grim Squeaker, and we're gonna visit the Pet Cemetery together, right?
Ooh, spooky.
All right, so you guys, something tells me this is going to be a tiny bit about reptiles, maybe.
No, all my reptile stories are a little bit heartbreaking, so I'd rather not go there. Okay. Might bring the tone, you know, a little down.
We do have kind of fun because we have almost the same story, ironically.
Yeah, that just happened.
It's just kind of weird.
Both of us at different times, basically.
Yeah, do you want to start?
You guys are together, you are one, and you're going to do Pet Cemetery, and you're going to do it now.
Yeah, you go for it, honey.
Yeah, so basically, you know, you have a little plot in your parents' garden where the family pets all end up buried, and over the years there's been a few different pets, and yes, some of them have been scaly and some of them have been furry, and we always kind of try and obviously bury them all somewhere around the same area. But, you know, then one time we were, my brother was helping me dig a hole, and we hit something, and we went in to try and figure out what it was, and turned out it was our beloved family dog. Yeah.
Well, we had a very similar story where we were, you know, digging a hole for our Madra, and what do we find? But it's sister who had passed away a couple of years prior. Now we weren't as graceful as Kitty's family. We decided just to sandwich them, and we decided to term it. So when you do this with your pets to sort of conserve space, it's Madra lasagna. As of course, for Toby, Madra is Dougie in Irish.
Alright.
So it's Dougie lasagna.
Clear up that confusion.
Not the type you order from the local takeaway, but.
Well, maybe a little bit.
Maybe really like it.
Yeah, you just don't know that's what you're actually ordering.
This is not so outrageous. You know, sometimes you go to an old cemetery and you'll see a family plot, and there'll be like, you know, and then there's Mary, and then there's Joseph. And then there's Catherine. Yeah,
true.
And then there's Mary again. And then there's Jane. And
that'll be Mary lasagna.
They've got to be stacked.
Yeah.
That's the only way they could put
them. Do you ever think maybe the pallbearers play like dominoes? So, oh, look, I got a Mary touching a Mary.
Guys, you're having far too much fun. This is a somber,
Wetter cemetery's
a somber
not fun.
Moment. Kitty, I know you seem a pretty sensitive person, but when that shovel hit that dead dog's body, that's not the end of the story, is it?
Well, myself and my brother just sort of looked at each other for a minute and then broke our shit laughing. Because what else could you do? We reburied the dog and then lashed the next animal
re-buried,
in.
Reburied, Toby. The Halloween episode, reburied.
Wow.
Reburied.
Unfixed, reburied.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for coming back into the station and doing your own pet cemetery. Pretty grisly. I like it. I like the sorrow. I like the unprocessed grief. That's the one piece that I really like the most. All right. So,
Madra lasagna.
Kitty LaRue, Grim Squeaker, our science fiction late night double feature here on Unfixed. And yeah, thanks so much, guys. And yeah, I'll see you in 15 minutes if you're still around. And otherwise, I'll be in touch digitally. All right.
Good night.
Thanks, baby.
I'll see you guys. As a class team, definitely some of our better guests.
Yeah, hell, damn straight, man. I mean, two guests was fun.
Yeah, I think more or less the best part of our show is where we talk to the guests, and having more can only be a good thing.
It's good. I loved it. I liked it. It's just that, you know, we're approaching 2 hours here, and then the normal radio show listener will only dip in and out. People who are listening to the podcast version will typically want something a bit less than 2 hours.
Absolutely. They're going to sort of tune out on us because, you know, we've only got, you know, like 10 things to say, and by now we're at 10 and a half, 11.
Yeah, or at least this is thing to say number 12.
Yeah.
So as I said, we're kind of running out of time. So
But it's a very special episode, and there's one regular scary thing we do,
which is
so it's going to have to be like 10 times as scary.
Yeah, every time we do the show, we have something that's fairly creepy,
a little bit concerning.
It is, and sure, and then this time around is no exception. However, like it's been notably missing, but so I think. Whoa.
I know what that sounds means.
Oh Jesus. Oh, Christ.
Not nearly normal.
It's time for...
The Scary News.
That it is.
All right, so...
The Scary News for October on the Halloween show. We're not letting you go home without getting a little freaked out.
Without somebody following you as you go.
The Scary News for October Halloween spooktacular double feature. A grisly mystery is unfolding in Texas after a 24-year-old girl... I'm sorry, a 24-year-old had gone missing for 6 days.
Okay, but maybe not a girl.
He's a male.
Ah, right, so definitely.
Alexander worked an overnight shift at a chemical plant in Angleton and slept in his truck during the day. He hadn't been seen since April 27th, 2016...
Ooh, well, that's a little while.
On May 3rd, a man who had been fishing all day noticed Alexander's pickup truck hadn't moved from where it was parked underneath a bridge near a boat ramp and became suspicious, according to the Washington Post.
Where had he been?
He approached the truck, the fisher person, and saw that Alexander's lifeless body was inside without its head. Headless body found inside truck. Despite a lengthy search involving boats and cadaver dogs. They're special kind.
They don't work at the airport at all.
Alexander's head hasn't been found, the Port Arthur News reports. His body was identified using fingerprints. We have absolutely no idea of the motive, but the mere fact that we have an unexplained homicide causes concern, a captain with the Brazoria County Sheriff's Department tells the news.
No, what I'm getting this, that there's like a car and no signs of entry, and then the guy has no head.
Stay tuned.
Events developing.
Alexander's family says he was never in trouble and he had no criminal history. His wallet, cash, and guitar was still in the truck. That might have something to do with why he was murdered. Perhaps his guitar playing annoyed the living hell out of somebody. We've all thought it. Honestly. All right.
Was that the end of the story? Is that and then they all lived happily ever after.
His guitar was still in the truck, so it does not appear to be a robbery. They cut my son's head off and then took my son's head. Jabal Alexander's father tells KTRK. Who would do that?
They call it human escargo.
According to CBS News, it's unclear if Alexander was dead or alive when he was decapitated. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so they never found that head.
No. I mean, as of the report... So, like, it looks like he was gone since the 27th April, and they found him on May 3rd. No head in the truck. See, I'm picturing that his headless body was still sitting up, and the drivers were, like, perfectly positioned with his hands on the wheel and stuff.
Like he'd just pulled over to take a mobile phone call.
Yeah, and then I think the guitar has more to do with this shocking crime than the police believe. I've been in bars. When they're like, you know, one guy, or even at like house parties, where one guy whips out a guitar, and you're just like, oh my god. So we were at a party moments ago, and now it's the James Show.
Oh, like the drum circles as well.
Oh man, no, that's about 50 times worse. But I've removed myself from those circles, Toby. I don't hang
those
out.
Drum circles.
well said. All right, man. We're really pushing on 2 hours here. So if you're hearing the sound of my voice, thank you so much. Thank you so much for sticking with us. I'd like to give a shout out to our guests, Kitty LaRue and the Grim Squeaker.
Yep.
If you want to check out their event, Bleed and Deadly, which you should, or you damned well should, I'm totally going to be there. Tell me you're going to make it out to one of the nights.
Absolutely. At the Rotunda, I think.
It is out. The thing is now, it's a part of the Rotunda Hospital, but it's the function room at the Rotunda Hospital.
The high functioning room at the Rotunda Hospital.
It's called the Pillar Rooms at Rotunda Hospital. I have the page up here. It's the Pillar Rooms in Rotunda Hospital where they have events, and there's a couple pictures flashing on the website. And it looks like a fantastic event. Really, it's like gold, gilded pillars and white ceilings and stuff, and it's a gigantic space. Really going to be an interesting space to watch freak shows and
someone will be hit by a sledgehammer. I guarantee
sword
it.
Swallowers. You got Kitty LaRue, our snake handler. Another fella. I think what did Grimm call the guy? So his name was something Rotten. It's like Donnie Rotten, I believe. He does the human blockhead stunt. He's got a bowler hat. He's all the way from Long Island or Coney Island.
I think he eats swords too.
The world, no, that might be one of the guys. Anyway, there's it's a five person performance, and the world's most pierced woman is also there. I think her name is Lane. And that's October 28th through the 31st in the Pillar Room, Rotunda Hospital in Dublin 1. You can find it on Facebook at facebook.com/bleeding, BLEEDIN, deadly freaks. So that's bleeding with no G, deadly freaks. Facebook.com/bleeding deadly freaks. I'm certainly going to have. Oh, and you can also find it on Twitter at bleeding deadly or bramstokerfestival.com. Bram Stoker, like the author, festival.com.
Okay, that's a lot of information, but. You need it.
You need to get out there. You need to see this damn thing. If you're here in Dublin, you have no excuse not to do it. It's one of the coolest things to do this October, if not the coolest thing. I mean, on the October weekend, all 4 days,
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So if you have no excuse not to attend this thing, in my personal opinion.
Okay.
Yeah, indeed. So we are most certainly we're winding down here, and it has been a double feature, has it not?
Yep.
It's an outro, Toby.
Absolutely. It's now we need something musical, and here it is.
Look, I just want to point out that this is actual Rocky Horror Picture Show's intro, but we're so hardcore, it's our outro.
Oh my goodness!
It was written a long time. Was this the 70s or something?
Yeah, I think probably.
So probably.
Mostly in the 70s.
Yeah. So listen, thanks everyone for listening. If you can hear us, I really, really appreciate you tuning in. Subscribe to us on iTunes or anywhere else you get podcasts. Send us a message at unfixed@mail.com or hit us up on Twitter at unfixedradio, facebook.com/unfixedradio. Toby, happy Halloween, man.
Happy Halloween to you. I hope we can express all of our Halloween terror to the wonderful children that will come to Unfixed's secret location on Halloween.
Yeah, wait. Where's the secret? Oh, right, yeah. We're gonna have kids come out. And
there's no escape.
No, it's something I'm really looking forward to. Every year, the kids coming out for Halloween.
And they come in, and then the giant iron door shuts down, and there's like clang, and then we know that Halloween has truly come.
The cage falls from the ceiling, and then it's Halloween night. I wouldn't change places with anyone tonight. All right, thanks so much for listening. Happy Halloween, and we'll see you next month. See you in November.
Happy Halloween to you all.